everyone. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Nick.
And you're listening to It Takes Two, the podcast where two people take two movies with the same plot or premise and watch and discuss them.
And in this episode, it's another remakes episode, folks. 1976's Carrie and 2013's Carrie.
And before anyone gets on our back and says these are two adaptations of the same source material, not a remake, take a look at what 1976's Carrie changed from the book and see that those exact same changes were made in the 2013 one. It is a remake, not by any fault of the director, who apparently both wanted to make a truer adaptation to the novel and shot a truer adaptation of the novel, and then the production company were like, cut out all these bits and reshoot these scenes to make them more like the 1976 movie. So it's a remake.
It's everything the original... I don't even know if it's the original. I was just trying to look that up. Everything 1976 does, it's so much more subtle, and it is less reliant on CGI and spoon feeding the audience in comparison to the 2013 one. I feel like the 2013 one, a lot of the stuff isn't earned. Like, they're both very short.
Yeah.
They're not, we watched them both in a row, and we were done in like 2.5 hours. No, 3 hours.
I think the remake had better acting than I expected. I feel like a lot of remakes are just like...
jarring.
Yeah, just like a shitty, you know, low effort thing. Whereas I feel like the actors were actually invested in it, which made it a better movie. And yes, the 1976 one is the original. It's the first movie to have been adaptated from any of Stephen King's works.
Right.
It was his first novel and his first piece of work that was picked up by any theater companies.
Do you know for the audience? I'm pretty sure Lisa knows about my love-hate relationship with Stephen King.
Yeah, we this isn't the first Stephen King thing we've done on the podcast. So people who listen to our Black Phone episode probably also have heard.
It's, he doesn't know how to end things. He makes really amazing universes. He makes really amazing, unique ideas. The endings of all the books that I've read of Stephen King all end in a very disappointing way.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest criticism would be the Dark Tower series. Spoilers for the Dark Tower series. Stephen King is in it. And it's like, save the cheerleader, save the world. You have to save, the characters have to save Stephen King or their universe is destroyed.
Wow.
Because he'd stop writing it. And you're just like, you know, I know for a fact because of the amount of stuff I've read about Stephen King and seen interviews with him. There was an entire period of his career where he was just on so much cocaine he doesn't remember writing a lot of his novels.
I did watch a K-drama like that once and it was very fun.
Fair enough.
Where it's like, the main character of the K-drama is someone who suddenly realizes that she's in, like, a Korean comic or, like, graphic novel series. And that she's a minor character whose like, whole reason for being there is to be a character who dies of an illness and, like, gets the main characters to meet each other and fall in love. And then she's like, hey, screw this. It's very fun. It's called Extraordinary You, if anyone's interested in K-dramas. Anyway, probably better than the Stephen King Dark Tower ending.
Like, if I haven't said it before, Cell is by far my favourite Stephen King novel. And the ending is so unbelievably disappointing that when I started reading Under the Dome, I started feeling, as I was getting close to the third act of the book, I was feeling like, I don't actually want to finish this.
Yeah.
Because there is no way the payoff is as good as the premise. Right. So I literally have never finished it. It's sitting on the shelf out there. Oh. Like, I bought it when it came out and I was like, this is like, you know, because obviously I spent a lot more time working in retail during a recession means you have a lot of spare time. And when you've done dusting everything, you kind of get bored. Yeah, I started reading a lot of novels, and when this came out, I sort of was just, like, instantly, like, I'm buying this.
Yeah.
And it just smelled like I was not getting a good ending.
Well, Stephen King, has said himself that he prefers the movie ending of Carrie to his written ending.
Yeah, because he can't end anything.
He's like, yeah, that's a better ending.
Yeah.
And obviously the remakes the ending of the first, with some changes, but it's still the ending of the film, not the ending of the book, by a long shot.
Getting into the differences, the main differences, obviously there's an era difference. Cell phones being a huge thing in 2013.
The thing that annoyed me about that was, like, I understand that they're trying to modernize it and that they're trying to do this whole, like, you know, add cyberbullying into it and stuff like that. Yeah. But I already thought it was kind of unbelievable that in the 70s, a 17-year-old doesn't know what a period is. I mean, she's obviously quite a late bloomer.
Yeah.
But not unheard of to, you know, be 17 and get your period.
Yeah.
But, like, to be 17 and get your first period and have never heard of it to the point that you're, like, horrified of it is weird. And I feel like that's just Stephen King not knowing
women. Yeah.
it's probably where that originally comes from. But then to try and adapt that into 2013 when they have access to the internet, where, like, and, you know, you could argue she clearly, or it seems like she doesn't have access to a computer or to technology or internet in her home, but they have school computers, and the second she starts to realize she has telekinetic powers, she immediately goes to the school computer and Googles it. So she knows how to do that. I mean, she does kind of look at another guy doing it, but she knows that that ability is there.
It's also, she doesn't Google, because, like...
Oh, she Googles magic powers.
Yeah, she Googles magic powers, and I'm like, in my mind, 2013, that's going to take you down some weird, like... Yeah,
she looked at people doing magic tricks.
Yeah, which is what she ends up watching on YouTube. She's watching, like, really bad
sleight of hand
tricks, and it's like, oh, I can do this. And it's like, she never practices, like... So she watches, like, a clearly, easily, like, replicatable, like, trick where you're trying to, like, move a page over.
Yeah.
So my main... I'm getting to my main point of why I dislike the remake over the original. In the remake, her powers are less earned. Like, she is just instantly like, I have full control.
Yes, yeah.
To the point where, like, I can understand... It's... So I went down a big rabbit hole, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was a rabbit hole on who wrote what first. And... For those who probably don't watch a lot, like, so for Marvel, for an example, there's a character called Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And in the adaptations for the live action of the third, well, sort of the ending of two and the inter third of the X-Men movies, Phoenix comes through.
So X2 and X-Men Last Stand?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Phoenix becomes a main character. Without going into a lot of lore that I don't really remember about Phoenix... it's basically like a perpetual god who's a small shard of it exists in the mutant Jean Grey.
Right.
And then there's some debate within the universe, because if I remember correctly, it turns out she's not a mutant and a bunch of other stuff. But anyway, the other character that came to mind is Scarlet Witch.
In
Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness.
And it's funny because I felt like Sissy Spacek kind of looks a little bit like Elizabeth Olsen. So yeah. I was thinking that when we were watching the first Carrie, I was like, why didn't they cast Elizabeth Olsen in the remake? Yeah. Like,
she was not unknown.
Her sisters are Mary Kate and Ashley Olsen.
Yes.
She was in shit in the 90s with the Olsen twins.
She wasn't recognizable without being like, oh, she's an Olsen sister.
I think she was, because the first few things I saw her in, I didn't realize that she was related to the Olsen sisters, because I'm stupid. I wasn't as into the Olsen twin world as some other people my age in the 90s. So you weren't
a straight white male waiting for the day you turned 18?
So there's a lot of women my age, people who were born in the early 90s, who grew up with Olsen twins movies, like, just like a whole series of VHS tapes of Olsen twins movies, I had a friend who was super into them, had seen, had like a collection of Olsen Twins movies. They did have a show as well, Two of a Kind. I watched some of that, but I didn't get into them.
I was going to say Full House, and I was like,
No. They had an Olsen Twins show. There was like they had a whole like Olsen Twins cinematic universe. You were super into that, you knew they had a little sister Lizzie.
Right.
But I did not, and I had seen her in what's it called? Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene.
I don't know.
It's a movie about cults, and it's really good, and she's really good. And I was like, who's this actress? She's incredible. And then she showed up in the Avengers movies, and I was like, oh, it's her. And then I was like, oh, she's an Olsen. Yeah. I did not put two and two together before. But yeah, so she was in, like, Old Boy, I think. The remake of Old Boy was before the Marvel stuff, as far as I know. And that was around, the remake of Old Boy was around the same time as this movie, if I remember correctly. So, like, they could have cast her in the remake of Carrie.
Yeah.
Easily.
Anyway, back to my point. From the original 1976.
Yeah.
Her powers develop very slowly, and it feels very, like, X-Men in general, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a story about puberty.
Yes.
And being ostracized from the general public. You know, we can argue about the tax laws and why there were mutants instead of, like, action heroes, because it was around the tax laws of, like dolls. There was a massive tax thing around dolls, so I'm putting dolls into the America. So when X-Men came through, they were basically marketed as mutants and therefore did not fall into the category of toys that had this additional tax, right? It's a big thing. I know you're looking very confused. It's the same, like, the amount of time where technology has created advanced, new, I wouldn't say advanced, but new technology has created a franchise. X-Men is a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And also within that is Transformers, because this new technology came out of being able to make things into other things and the cheapness of the production, but the quality of it. And then they made this entire franchise around being able to make things into other things.
Mm-hmm.
It's all been a massive ploy to sell toys.
Yeah.
So without going into all the lore about X-Men, you know, it is about puberty. Is it about, like, you know, having emotions that are uncontrollable and then physically manifesting in life?
Mm-hmm.
And Carrie is the ultimate, like, the 76 version is the ultimate version of this. Her powers only manifest when she is emotionally fragile and displaying emotions that are very, very passionate, very, like, anger and fear. And I feel like the 2013 one is not earned, like I said. She just is able to control things on will rather than without having the emotional part to channel her power.
She does get that in the 76 one, but it happens later.
Yeah.
Have you seen the Netflix series I'm Not Okay With This?
It sounds familiar, but I don't think I've seen it.
Okay, we should watch it because it's great, and I think it does this exact thing better than Carrie.
Right.
But it very clearly has homages to Carrie in it,
yeah.
But it is also about, like, someone developing powers as they go through puberty and then and not being able to control them and, like, it being reflected by emotions, and then when she gets really embarrassed, like, things happen, and, you know. Anyway.
I feel like the differences between I'm going to just use, because it's otherwise I'm going to say Carrie and Carrie, it's going to be very confusing. Sissy and Chloe's
mm-hmm.
adaptations, right?
Yeah.
Chloe feels like, is it Matilda, the girl that has magical powers and can move stuff?
Mm-hmm.
It feels sort of within the Harry Pottery universe. Just the delight of her being able to do this.
Right.
Where you have, I think in Carrie, you know, the to describe the character for those who haven't seen it, obviously spoilers, her mother is a person who is suffering from mental illness and is very, whose mental illness is displaying in a very, very aggressive Christian fundamentalist way where anything she doesn't understand is literally the work of the devil, and everybody is unclean, everybody is filled with sin, and the amount of, and I'm sorry for the triggering part, the amount of child abuse that we see on screen in both adaptations, yeah. It's way worse than 76. Because the teachers are just hitting kids left, right, and center, and it's like, you would go to jail if 90s onwards from
she
that.
Hits her, the teacher hits her in the 2013.
Yeah, but it's like one, and she's just like, I'm sorry I hit you. Yeah. But the other one is just like, everyone is smoke. The teachers are smoking around children. The gym teacher just like beats
that's
the shit out of her.
Very
70s. Yeah, the 70s shows through very much. In a 2025 lens, it is very, very jarring. But yeah, the Julianne Moore's portrayal of the mother is so good.
Absolutely spectacular. That's partly what I was talking about with the acting. I think across the board the acting is good though in the remake. There's some weird stuff with Chris and Billy. They're strange characters in the remake, but that's a character choice, not an acting thing. But Julianne Moore is just like incredible. Julianne Moore is giving like Oscar worthy performance in this film.
And it's such a shame that like big people overlook horror movies, especially adaptations of horror movies as well for performance.
Yeah, well, the 1976 Carrie did have two nominations for Academy Awards. Yeah.
Who do you know who it was for?
Sissy Spacek was one.
Yeah, who plays Carrie.
Yeah, I can't remember if I took down the other one, but I could find it real quick. It's one of the, it was, so she got a nomination for Best Leading Actress, and there was also a Supporting Actress one. But there's so many supporting actresses in it, I don't remember which one it was. But I can find out real quick. So I was surprised to even find that out, that, like, because, as you say, it is very much, the horror as a genre is overlooked in awards, generally speaking.
Because her performance is, like, don't get me wrong, both the mother characters, they have the same energy on screen.
It was the mother character. Piper Laurie, who played Margaret White, got nominated for Best Supporting Actress.
They both have the same sort of energy on screen, which is like everything you're experiencing, like to the point where she blames a 17-year-old girl getting her period on the original Eve's original sin.
Yeah.
To the point where only people who have unclean thoughts and are sinners get their period, which is, that alone is child abuse.
Because, yeah, and I think it's the fact that, like, she, in both adaptations, she didn't prepare her for it.
Yeah.
You know. But obviously her school didn't either, which is bizarre, because there's no way you get, I mean, I know the American education system is bonkers sometimes, but there's no way you get to 17 without being taught something about the reproductive system.
Because there is an offhanded mentioned comment in the 2013 one talking about the fact that the principal apologizes about the legal ramifications of why Carrie can no longer be homeschooled.
Right.
And I feel like being that she has no friends, being that she doesn't fit in, being that she basically goes straight from home to school... I feel like she's only just joined the school.
I forgot that they did have a throwaway line to explain away the fact that she doesn't know.
And I feel like it sort of doesn't quite cover up all the things that you've mentioned about not using Google and stuff like that. But it does feel like it's sort of like, here's the rug. We're not going to put it underneath, but we're just going to like leave it in that area where you may kick it underneath and not remember about it later.
Yeah, yeah. Like, cause I did make a note of that at the time. It was like, oh yeah, this is their explain away why she knows nothing line.
Because you are right. Like, there is no way you'd get to 17 and never have had a health class.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I went to Catholic school in Ireland and we had, at age 12, like a...
Didn't you say
one day,
or am I making this up and this is like some weird memory? Didn't you have a health class where some of the class members were already pregnant?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we didn't do health class. We had like in primary school had like a one day thing where they brought in someone to literally just do sex ed with us for one whole day when we were all like 12. But at that point, some like several of my classmates had already had their periods by 12.
Yeah.
So they were like, yeah, we already had to go through this. Like, what are you talking about? And then in secondary school, they just did like a 1 hour thing with us when we were like 16 or 17. And yes, at which point there was at least one girl in my class who was pregnant. But she got pregnant on purpose. So that's a whole other story.
Do you want to give me a tidbit of the story?
I think she just didn't want to go. My understanding was she didn't want to go to school anymore. And to drop out of school, she purposely got pregnant so she wouldn't have to come to school anymore.
Okay.
Which is great at 16. But, like, I don't, you know, I haven't been in touch with that person in, like, almost 20 years at this point.
So you're saying that child...
what they're going...
that child is now a 20-year-old somewhere. Possibly.
Yeah, well, it would have been... so she would have had the kid when we were 17. So, 2008. So there'd be a, what, 16-year-old now?
That's nuts.
Yeah. So that child is now at the age that they were conceived in.
Yeah, that's bananas.
Yeah.
Isn't
that nuts?
Yeah, that's shocking to me. Anywho, where am I going? Yeah, so that's how I would get away with the sort of, you know, that sort of thing where you were saying about how did she not know how to Google.
I think, yeah, because the...
it might have been Ask Jeeves then.
No, 2013.
Oh, yeah, true. Google wasn't.
It was definitely Google.
Yeah. She could have used Ask Jeeves.
She could have used Yahoo or Bing.
Oh, yeah, Yahoo Quick. Yahoo Answers.
Did we not see it? I can't remember what it was.
It's probably some...
made up one.
Yeah, to protect, you know, not giving... asking Google for money and not getting it.
I'm trying to think what they use. I think in, like, National Treasure they used Bing or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But then again, that was 2004, so it was...
I highly recommend for those out there listening right now that you use DuckDuckGo.
Yes.
It doesn't have an algorithm and is not powered by AI, and it doesn't steal your data. That is a free sponsor to... free shout-out to DuckDuckGo. Please change all your defaults.
These days, I only really use Google at work, and that's mainly because the default search at work is Bing.
Yeah.
And... half the time if I search for something and it comes and it searches on Bing, Bing cannot tell me anything.
Yeah.
So Bing is so useless that I'm like, okay, fine, let's go to Google.
Yeah.
Whereas at home, yeah, I use DuckDuckGo as well.
And I think you've got a little bit of more privacy because I'm going to get into weird IT stuff for a second. You'd be using, if you're at work, it'd be using a subnet mask and your IP address would probably be the router rather than your computer, because if your computer's plugged straight in, you've got a little bit of, and you've got everybody's garbage getting washed through, everybody Googling stuff would be washed through, so you're a little bit more protected at work Googling things. Not that I'm suggesting you Google controversial subjects at work, folks, don't do that. You will get in trouble.
Yeah, your IT people can tell which computer it's been searched on.
Yeah. Anyway, back to 2030, back to 76. I feel like the background character actors, the scenes we get with the other characters that aren't Carrie, aren't her mother, aren't the gym teacher, are a little bit more fleshed out in 76. It does feel that it does affect the pacing. John Travolta's character is far more interesting than I don't even remember his...
what? Billy is Billy, the character. I think Chris and Billy, that couple, are better in the 76 version.
100%.
But I feel like the intentions of Sue and Tommy are much clearer in the 2013 one.
Yes.
Because in the 76 one, I thought they were in on the joke.
Yeah, it does feel that way, isn't it?
Because, so, what happens is, Sue is one of her classmates, and she's going out with Tommy, who Carrie maybe has a crush on. It's unclear, but, like, it's the only person she shows some interest in.
Yeah.
And Sue, and this is true of both movies, but it's just not as clear in the first, in the original, I think. Like, Sue feels bad for the fact that they bullied Carrie.
Yeah.
So she asks Tommy to ask Carrie to the prom. But Chris and Billy's whole plan with Carrie depends on her going to the prom with Billy.
Yeah, yeah.
So I assumed in the original, because they don't make it clear, and because Sue and Chris are friends, that they had come together. And the plan is Sue gets Tommy to, or take gets Tommy to take Carrie to the prom, and then Chris and Billy pull the prank while Sue and Tommy are, or while Carrie and Tommy are at the prom.
There is a lot of like, it is almost an IKEA gun plan. Because it also relies on them being named homecoming king and queen.
Yeah, which they do better in the 70s when it's clear that they rig that vote. Because they, like, get people together and get people to volunteer to collect them, and then they, like, swap out the votes so that they'll win and go up, and then they can drop the pig's blood on Carrie.
Yeah.
I was going to say spoiler alert, but I think that's the one bit of Carrie everyone knows.
Yeah.
It's
a trope at this point.
Yeah. And I got so confused because Sue shows up to the prom.
Yeah.
In the 76 when Sue, like, is at home having dinner with her family, and she's like, oh, it's 8 o'clock, I gotta go. And then she runs to the prom, and she hides backstage where they're preparing this prank, and she's holding the rope.
Yeah.
And then she looks at it, and it's like, what is this? And then she gets out and sees a book, and it's like, oh, no. And it's like, what do you mean? Are you not, I thought you were involved in this.
Yeah.
Whereas in the 2013 one, she's genuinely remorseful, and she's like, I think it would be really nice for Carrie to go to the prom, and I think, you know, a punishment for me, a fitting punishment for me would be for me to give up that opportunity so that she can have it and she can have a nice day. And Tommy is kind of like wishy-washy about it, and then it's like, no, okay, let's do this. And they seem genuine.
Yeah, because it's not to the point where Tommy actually spends time with Carrie that he actually sort of, because it feels very like 1970s wish-washy, kind of like, he is the character. I don't know if it's the actor's portrayal. Like, the actors look far too old to be the characters they're playing.
Oh, they are. Yeah. In the original. In the 2013 one, so Carrie's supposed to be 17.
Yeah.
And Sissy Spacek was 25 playing her.
Yeah.
And Chloe Grace Moretz was 15 playing her.
Yeah.
So she was younger than she's supposed to be.
The I think it works to the advantage for the portrayal as well.
Yeah.
Tommy in the 76 feels very 1970s high school jock, and he has high school jock energy where he is kind, like, if it wasn't for his poem, you'd expect him to be like a plank of wood.
Yeah.
The constant, like, when they're questioning him, it's like, why do you want to take Carrie? Like, can you leave the girl alone?
Yeah.
And he's just like, oh, you know, oh my God, guys. Like, you know, he's got the big blonde afro. He's wearing a denim shirt.
Yeah.
It is very 70s. Like, and his sort of attitude towards her when he's, like, asking her out is just like, hey, what are you reading in the library? It's like, oh, you want to go with prom with me? And she's like, no, and runs away. And then he just rocks up at her house and is just like,
and refuses to leave until she, and she keeps asking him to leave and saying no, and he refuses to leave until she says yes.
Yeah.
Whereas in the remake, he kind of talks her around to it.
Yeah.
And he's like, and he's like, you know, you liked my poem, and, you know, I think, you know, we could spend the night, you know, we could spend that evening together, we could have a fun time, like, just enjoy it.
Because in the 2013 one, she reads out her favorite poem.
Right.
And he's the only one that doesn't make fun of her.
Right.
Including the teacher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in the 2013 one, he seems to actually care. Because there's even a moment, like, we get to see him and Sue talking about it, and her, and, you know, before she comes up with the plan for him to take her to the prom, talking about Carrie and how she participated in the bully, and then he's like, well, you know, to try and make her feel better, he's like, oh, one time I kicked this guy.
Yeah.
But, like, and then he's like, but actually, that guy had been a dick to me all year. Whereas he's like, what did Carrie do to you? And she's like, nothing. And he's like, kind of problematic, Sue.
It is very, with, like, everyone know, most people know the term run to the litter. And it is a, and it is very similar within friends groups. It is very similar, especially with young boys. It is very similar with girls as well. There is always, like, a leader who everybody else goes along with, and then within that same circle, there is the smaller or weaker individual. Could be based on, you know, could be, for boys, it could be height, it could be the fact that, you know, they're poor, could be any number of things that excludes them from being within this inner circle.
If you're going to say that, Sue, I don't think that's accurate.
No. But I feel that who's the bad girl? Chrissy.
Chris.
Chris.
Yeah.
Chris is very much like, she is the...
Yeah, she's Regina George.
Yeah, she is the queen bee within this group. Yeah. And she is literally just, like, deflecting everything towards Carrie.
Yeah.
And it is very obvious within, you know, the whole cyberbullying thing within 2013. And it is very much like, if everyone makes fun of the same person, no one's going to make fun of me. And it all comes from a place of insecurity, you know, that sort of thing. And, it's, you find it a lot with people with siblings,
mm-hmm.
Especially when they're all boys. A lot of, you know, you get like from boys, basically, if, for those who have lots of brothers, they'll understand. For men who have lots of brothers, they'll understand. But like the amount of slurs you call each other away from your adults is borderline insane. You know, it could be like speaking of the era, because I call people out these days when they say shit that they shouldn't.
Yeah.
And I try and also correct myself when I end up slipping and saying, say, like, homeless instead of unsheltered, you know, sort of that sort of thing.
Yeah, but even that one's not, like, as bad as shit that other people
say. Yeah. It's very much, like, with that within that group, and I feel like so in... the movie does actually feel some form of remorse and could understand that she could be friends with this girl. And the like, why is she different? It's because she doesn't hang out with them. She doesn't like follow the same thing. And I find that with some friends in the past who were going to private school based on the fact that their parents were like scrounging for it. Versus having so much excess that their children could be sent to private school and not affect them.
Yeah.
You brought it up with the BMW thing. There was a person I knew who you had to be in a club by having like a certain bag. Right. So all the girls got these bags.
Yeah.
So you weren't allowed to associate them with them because you didn't have a Gucci bag or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah.
The BMW club that was hilarious that your mother shut down and was just when I heard that story, I was just like, that's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, for people who haven't heard this story, it's that my brothers did go to a private school, mainly because I think my older brother needed some extra direction in schooling, because he's a very smart guy, but was in a school that was kind of underprivileged and not giving him the attention he needed to actually like do well in school. And then my younger brother, they went there just by kind of by default, because that's where their older brother had gone. But we were not super wealthy, and a lot of, like you mentioned, a lot of people in private schools are. My mom picked my brother and their friend up from school one day, and their friend said to my mom that she needed to get a BMW so that my brother could join the BMW club at school or whatever.
Just a club made by kids where parents owned BMWs. Yeah.
And then my mom said something to the effect of, well, where is your parent in their BMW and why aren't they picking you up from school?
Yeah.
It's like, whoop.
If the car is so important, why are they not picking you up?
I think I would prefer the, you know, time spent with parents than over having a car that I really couldn't give a shit about.
Yeah, it's such a, that is very much the mindset. So, yeah, you sort of get this character development, you know, Chris gets banned from going to prom, suspended because she's not taking the punishment of bullying Carrie. And then she goes, like in both movies, in my opinion, like in the 76, she is a bad egg and she is both emotionally manipulating her boyfriend.
Yeah.
Emotionally abusing her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Being physically abused by her boyfriend. And then sexually abusing him to get her way. She is a very toxic person in 76.
Yeah.
But I feel like she is a like borderline mustache villain.
In the 2013 one, she just goes off the rails, and her boyfriend, instead of just being like, you know, a jock from another school, is like, acts like a career criminal.
Yeah.
Because he's like, when they're setting up the pig's blood to fall on Carrie, he's like, this is felony assault. if you tell anyone I was involved with this, I'll kill you. Yeah, and you're just like, what is, who is this guy? And then they're like fleeing the town or whatever. And you're like, what? Like, and then she's like, oh yeah. Cause in the 76 one, so this is, we're jumping all over the place, but we're right towards the end. After Carrie goes nuts and her powers go like haywire and she starts like actually using them to harm people. Chris and Billy like escape in their car.
Yeah.
And then in the 76 one, like they see her and they just panic and almost and try to run over her and then she stops it.
Yeah.
But in the 2013 one, they see her and she goes, "That's Carrie! Run her over! Kill her! Kill her! Just kill her!" And you're just like, okay, all right. Like, why did you escalate to wanting to murder? Like, what is wrong with these teens?
If you're... Because they see a lot more of what happens in the 76 version. Because they're like, I think they're underneath the stage.
Yeah, in the 76 one they're under the stage. In the 2013 one they're above in the lighting.
Yeah, they sort of like watch through the window. And if you saw a child you'd been abusing and then you dropped pig's blood on them, and the response for them not being, like, crying and running off the stage was to murder fucking everybody.
Yeah.
With, like, mystical powers.
Yeah.
You'd be like, fuck this, I'm getting out of town. Which is what they do. But instead, it's just like, there she is, let's kill her. Like, you just watched her murder an entire...
Also,
like,
you just saw her, like, create a crater in the ground in front of you, and you're like, oh, there she is. Let's just run over in this car that she definitely can't do anything to.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, it is very mustache-twirling, like, villain-esque in the 2013 one.
Yeah.
She... Oh, my God. So, before I get into the most iconic scene of Carrie's... I just want to talk about the mother a little bit more, just for a little bit of like subtlety. She has no safe space. Carrie has no safe space.
No, yeah, bullied at school, bullied at home.
Bullied at school, bullied at home. Physically abused, emotionally abused, spiritually abused.
Also, like she, in the 2013 one, she goes to buy fabric, and when she gets home, her mother is telling her, like, where did you go? You know that you're supposed to only go to school and come straight home.
Yeah.
So she's not even allowed to go to a third place.
Yeah. And I feel like the spiral the mother takes is more disturbing in a what is happening on screen level in the 76, and more disturbing on a implication level in 2013.
Okay.
Because in the 2013 movie, so both movies start off with like, oh my God.
Well, the 2013 movie has a scene like before it.
Yeah.
Which is kid Carrie being born.
And her mother.
I've just remembered, this scene really annoyed me.
Which one?
The birth scene.
Okay, yeah.
Because here's the thing. It's set up as, like, she's, like, screaming or whatever. And then you see, like, along the stairs, like, there's all the spilled stuff. And it's like, oh, did her water break here? And there's, like, broken things, whatever. It's obviously, like, a panic.
Yeah.
And then you get into her room where she's giving birth by herself. No one with her. But she's lit, like, 30 candles. When did she do that? Did she go, like, oh I got to stop and light all these candles before I get into
the atmosphere? In between contractions, I have to create a massive fire risk in my wooden house.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a point where, like, this is another question I will bring up to you, and obviously spoilers, the entire podcast is spoilers, folks.
Yeah, we know that.
Does Carrie's telekinetic ability stop her mother from stabbing her with scissors? Or is it she's just, like, the Cain and Abel moment? Not Cain and Abel. Who's the guy who takes his son up to the top of the mountain and God stops him from murdering his own son? It's not Cain and Abel, because Cain and Abel were brothers.
And they killed each other. Or one of them killed the other. That was the first murder.
Yeah. What am I, my brother's Michael. Keeper? I can't remember. God damn it.
I don't know which of them.
Oh, that's ironic what I just said. Sorry, I apologize. What the hell's his name? Anyway, he, like, takes his own son up. And it just, it, like, there's that two moments of, like, was the filmmaker, the writer, trying to emulate this moment of, like, God stopping her from killing her child? Or was it Carrie's super, like, because that would be the most emotional part of being like, I'm nice and cozy and warm. Oh my God, now this
Abram.
Thing. Abram, yeah. And I that was the question I was asking, but I couldn't remember the reference, so thank you. We got there in the end.
Yeah, he was killing Isaac.
Yeah. So what's your opinion?
Yeah, I think it's... I don't think it's the powers at that point.
Right.
I think it is a decision, and then she kind of says it later, you know, that, and she said in both movies, I think she says that she thought about killing herself as soon as she got pregnant.
Yeah.
And, you know, and she regrets not doing that, which is kind of a horrible thing to say to your child. And then she talks about how she should have killed her when she was born.
Yeah.
But only in the 2013 do they show that she actually, like, considered it. And I think she says in the 2013 one that, like, she went to do it and then she chose not to, and she wanted to have the baby, to keep the baby. And I think you could argue that it's like that, you know, from her perspective, it's, oh, God said, don't do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's kind of how she sees things and how she believes.
The way the mother character treats her daughter in both these movies is so...
horrible?
Yeah. It's disgusting. It's like, I think... realistically, from a 25 lens, from looking back at both these movies, Carrie, removing the ability to have telekinesis, right? Mm-hmm. Removing that. There is, because she doesn't understand, because she hasn't been exposed to everything, there is no way in hell, like, everybody knows about her mother.
Yeah.
Within the community in 76. In 2013, it's very sort of like, oh, well, we can't say anything because it's like religious freedom.
Yeah.
It's, if she actually got to sit down and talk to a counsellor, the counsellor could have called somebody. That person, you know, I know the social system within the States is not the best. It's not the best in New Zealand either. Like, mental health is such a huge issue. And I feel like if someone had stood in and been like, okay, cool, I'm going to go interview the mother and talk about, like, the problems Carrie's having at school.
I think even within the confines of what we see in the movie, that should have happened.
Yeah.
There's a moment when, in the 2013 one, when after she's had her period and the bullying has happened, and she's with the principal and her teacher, and the principal says, you know, you're going to be, or they tell her she's going to be excused from gym for the next week or whatever. Yeah. And then he says, we have to call your mother. And the look of panic on her face. And she's like, no, why? Why would you know? Like, at that point, if you're a teacher and you're a good teacher, you go, what is going on at home for this child? That's her reaction. Here's
the little cat. I don't think, none of the movies, the teachers are good.
I think the gym teacher is supposed to be good in both movies. I think the gym...
But
I think she's supposed to actually care.
Yeah.
I think, especially the Despite 13, I think Judy Greer plays quite a sympathetic. I love Judy Greer, though.
Mm.
I think she's great in pretty much everything I've seen her in. Very comedic actress. She's the next Joan Cusack. Not that Joan Cusack's gone.
Because we see in a little bit through the middle of, I think it's like beginning of act, it might be end of act one, act two, Julianne Moore's portrayal of the mother, she is literally stabbing herself in the leg.
Yeah.
To hold back what she, like, to deal with what she's, and she's physically, like, hurting herself constantly throughout the movie, and you see it, it's just very subtle.
It's like those guys in the Da Vinci Code.
Yeah.
Who, like, whip themselves through.
Yeah, flagellants, I think, is it? No, that might be farting.
No, that's flatulence.
Oh, okay, so flagellants, yeah, I am right. I don't think
flagellation.
I don't think I've seen that word written down since I read the Da Vinci Code. Anyway, it's not as popular. Let's bring flatulence back, folks. No, that's never left.
I'll bring flatulence back every day.
Put a fart emoji in the comment section. There's no way in hell that there would not be some form of intervention if someone actually spoke. Like, everybody knows, everyone speaks to the mother, both ends, like, she is mentally unstable. And it is very sad that, again, public school system, mental health, not important. Even in this day and age, you know, we're going forward 12 years and it's still people aren't getting the same support. Gun violence within schools is up. You know, we can't go one day without some kids, you know, being arrested, planning something. There is a huge, huge deficit within where this is set, which is, I'm assuming, middle America. It's like generic America, small town America. And yeah, those kids aren't like getting any support whatsoever. And it really shows, because you could have the exact same movie except the kid has a gun at the end. And it'd be the exact same movie. You could have a father abusing his son to the point where then he gets asked out by the most popular girl in school to go to prom, and they bully him on stage, and he just like whips out an, you know, M4 platform and kills everybody. Like, the movie writes itself, and all you do is change the genre and the year. And it is very sad that people aren't getting the support they need. And if you know somebody, this is especially within New Zealand, because a lot of young Māori men in their own lives, because they're not getting support. If you know somebody you haven't spoken to in a while, please reach out to them. Please have a conversation with them and see how they're doing. The last thing you want is be like, oh, I should call that person and then or talk to that person, or I should go see that person, I should message them on social media, and then you don't, and then something like that, you know, a cousin, family member, and it does happen. I've seen it happen to workmates, or people, colleagues. Reach out, talk to everybody. Everybody needs a network. Human beings are social animals.
Mm.
We need to talk to each other. You need to have safe space. I know that's a polarizing word because people use it in the wrong way, but everyone needs a safe space, and that is where you can say something and not be criticized. And a lot of people aren't getting that at home, because of the unrealistic portrayal of certain individuals' lives on social media. Our outlook on the world is becoming more and more, we have infinite information, but our outlook is becoming more and more jaded. And these algorithms, these things people are building in, are literally to keep you on the app, to sell you things, to make these billionaires prop money. And it is not mentally healthy. It is not good. And you end up in a situation where you end up on stage, pig's blood on you, and then you kill everybody. It's as relevant when the book was written, when the 76 came out, and when 2013 came out. We are facing the same issue, and we're talking over the last 40 years. Mm. Longer. 74 that Carrie was written? I can't remember. It was just before the movie came out.
Yeah, it was literally like right before the movie. Yeah.
So the last 50 years we're facing, and obviously because the book was written, there was obviously that within the social zeitgeist, because that's how Stephen King gets his ideas, that and cocaine.
I think he based some of the characters off people he knew.
So we're gonna say 70 years.
Yeah.
Basically since World War II. We're going to say the social stigma of people not being able to address their mental health, and it's just continuing, and it's never going to change and be fixed until there are government policies and legislation to put there, and they won't do it because these people who own social media companies keep giving them money because they know they're doing wrong. They know it. You can't look at these people in the face and or criticize them without people defending them and you suffering something. And that's the world we live in, and this world we've lived in since basically the end of World War II, which is unfortunate, but that's why it is up to you, the individual, to make a difference, because you can't, it's not going to happen. Nothing's going to change. Protecting guns isn't going to stop
the world that we live in.
Yeah. Anyway, back to the movies. I think we've covered pretty much everything off except for the last scene, I guess. So the motivations, the lead up, the interactions with the other characters, the motivations of other characters, the differences in the movies.
Hmm.
I do love the eyeball thing.
The eyeball thing?
Yeah, in 2013, when she uses her powers to, like, maximum her eyeballs vibrate.
Right.
And it is very much like, I will not, like, beseech the witch, like, quote that the mother uses in both movies. And you're like, oh my god, is it actually, is it satanic powers that she's got? Like,
I think you're supposed to be like...
Yeah.
I think it's mostly ambiguous that, like, maybe this is it. Maybe that is Satan. Maybe it was Satan that put the baby in her.
Yeah, because it is very much like her mother. Yeah, the unbelievable description that the mother gives Carrie in 76. Sissy's Carrie is literally given the description of how she was conceived. And there's a little bit in the last one talking about, like, but it's not as, like, graphic.
Hmm.
Yeah. Which famous scene do you like better? Ignoring CGI and all of, which did you enjoy better?
What do you mean?
So the titular scene that everyone knows from Carrie.
Carrie. Yeah. The blood scene. The blood scene.
The execution of everyone inside the gym.
I probably prefer the original, but I did think, like, the remake one is gruesome.
Yeah.
They really leaned into the horror of it. They were like, and because I think Sissy Spacek, like, plays it as that she's so shocked, like, she's so, like, engulfed in shock that she just can't, that she's just, like, everywhere she looks, she causes something to happen.
Yeah.
Whereas in the 2013 one, like, Chloe Grace Moretz is like I'm going to destroy you all.
She does go, like, on a full, like, Sith Lord rampage.
Yeah, with, yeah. Like, and very deliberate and very intentional.
It feels Avatar The Last Airbender. It feels borderline Dragon Ball Z-esque.
Yeah.
Because she's, like, literally, like, to rise someone up, she, like, sticks her hand out like she's a Sith Lord.
Yeah, she does a lot of, like,
grabs them in air and, like, yeah, and, like, lifts them off the ground. You know, when she's attacking people with electrified cables, she is, like, literally whipping her arms out. And I'm doing the movements. I'm sorry, folks, if you hear my watch rattling. Doing the going through and, like, literally reaching out. But it was, like, Sissy's performances, she's, like, fully wide-eyed, unblinking, unmoving.
Yeah.
Like, that is, I feel like, the most, I know this is a silly statement, the most realistic example of telekinesis.
Yeah.
Which is, you're using your mind to move things, so why would the rest of your body be involved?
Yes, yeah.
But I do love the vibrating iris thing. I think that's awesome.
My understanding, because I haven't read the book, but my understanding is in the book the scene is kind of a mix of the two, but also, like, neither of them. Because she, in shock, runs out of the place. And then when she gets outside, she's like, hey, wait a second. And turns around and locks them all in and watches through a window as she doesn't.
Right.
So it is, like, the shock and then the, like, hang on, deliberate, like, a harm. So they kind of both, you know, obviously Chloe Grace Moretz not leaving is because of in the 1976 one she doesn't leave.
It's also very obvious in the 2013 one that Tommy's dead.
Yes, they make it very clear that Tommy died.
Yeah.
In the book, he just gets knocked unconscious by the bucket, but then when the fire goes up, it blows something up and that kills him.
Yeah.
But yeah, in the 2013 one, in the 76 one, it's very ambiguous. He just gets hit. She doesn't even seem to notice.
Yeah.
In the 2013 one, it clearly has killed him, and then she freaks out because he has died.
Yeah.
And then it's just, like... And it's kind of Final Destination-y that, like, she's killing people off in ways that make sense for them.
Yeah.
Like, the vain girl gets her face pushed through a window, and the like, girls who just are always, like, following the mean girl get actually trampled.
Yeah.
I think, is it one of the jocks who gets crushed in the bleachers?
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
So they're trying to do, like, fitting pains. It's so gruesome.
Yeah.
Very gruesome.
It's also very funny because, like, she couldn't have pre-planned it.
Yeah.
So therefore she's just like, oh, there's the jock that made fun of me. I'll crush him with the bleachers. Yeah, oh, yeah, the girl who's so vain, she looks at herself in the mirror. I'm going to smash her face up.
Yeah, it's very...
The girls who follow the leader, I'm going to have them... oh my God, that's perfect.
And then there's the moment with the teacher who's nicer, where she, like, force chokes her and lifts her up. And you're like, oh, she's going to kill her. But then she just electrifies the whole floor and kills everyone else. And then it's like, I was actually saving you.
I'm still punishing you.
Yeah.
But I'm not killing you.
Yeah.
What did you think of the crucifixion iconography of
also this? Not in the book.
Yeah.
In the book, she just stops her mother's heart with her mind.
Which is the most efficient way.
It's kind of badass, to be honest. They do, so it's a St. Sebastian thing, right? Because they got a little statue of St. Sebastian.
Yeah, that's also really bizarre. The glowing eyes.
Yeah, St. Sebastian has glowing eyes in the 2013 one. So in both versions of the film, I don't know if this is in the book, the mother has like a closet or like a cupboard that she locks Carrie in, and it's got like a little statue of Saint Sebastian with all the arrows in him that she can pray to, I guess. I don't know why Saint Sebastian, but because he's like the patron saint of plagues and soldiers, which are not connected to this. Anyway, and then when her mother tries to kill her, she turns the knife on her and she stabs her with a bunch of knives, so she gets the kind of Saint Sebastian arrow imagery, but with knives, and she does that in both movies.
But it is very much like crucifixion, because the first thing you see is her getting stabbed.
Hands
extended, and both of her hands.
Knives in the hands, pinning her, and then the Saint Sebastian arrows. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I guess it's just trying to tie in the religious iconography, but I don't quite understand why Saint Sebastian.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe it's they're trying to say like because he's a martyr, but like. Most of the saints are martyrs. That's their whole deal.
The most disturbing thing I found rewatching it, because obviously I hadn't taken this information on board the last time I watched it, one of the items in 76 that pierces her mother is a spatula. And it's a rounded, like it's a type of spatula that you could buy if you go into like a chef's store, like a store that's designed for, you know, like for actual kitchen supplies rather than your local... like generic store that's got, you know, standard kitchen appliances in it. The speed and the force that would have to travel in to penetrate your skin is insane. So, like, her powers are... It's not like, oh, getting stabbed by stab things.
How they filmed that?
Were they on strings like they used to do with old samurai movies?
Yeah, they did it in reverse. So the knives and things are on strings, and they were embedded in her and then yanked out.
Wow.
And then they reversed the footage. Which was very cool. I don't think that's how they did it with the Julianne Moore one. I'm sure that was probably mostly CG. I think they did try to do real effects with some, like, practical effects with some of the stuff in the 2013. My understanding is the shattering mirror, they did practical effects, but it looked terrible, so then they replaced it with CGI. So that possibly they might have tried a version with real effects, but I think it is just CGI. Whereas, I really like that was a way for them to do it in the original.
Because in old samurai movies, they had the arrows were on string.
Yeah.
And they would actually fire them at the actors.
Okay.
So if you had a scene where you're like a samurai and you're like, you know, fought a bunch of dudes and that's how they would do the Boromir scene in samurai movies, is literally someone would actually fire an arrow at you with a tiny nail on the end of it and have a board underneath your costume and a guideline for the arrow so it can't go anywhere except that board.
Right.
And it looks real.
Yeah.
From an era of, like, who was the guy we just watched a bunch of movies from? Seven Samurai.
Kurosawa?
Yeah, Kurosawa. Yeah, that's how they did it.
Yeah.
So the actors are getting hit by real arrows that just don't have, like, points on them.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's very cool. I like practical effects. But yeah, I thought that was a cool kind of effect thing that they did.
And doing it in reverse is fantastic.
Yeah, like,
that's such a good...
Yank them all out.
And because it's such a close... Like, the cinematography on that scene where they're so zoomed in.
Yeah.
It works really well. Do you want to move into some trivia?
Yeah, it's probably going to take a while. I think I have a lot of trivia.
having a drink of
lots
water
of things
while
about him. So a lot of it was around, so I think Sissy Spacek was very much like really wanted to do everything like as realistically as possible.
Right.
So for example, when she's preparing for her character, she totally isolated herself from the rest of the ensemble. She decorated her dressing room with heavy religious iconography. She studied Gustave Doré's illustrated Bible. She studied body language of people being stoned for their sins, and started every scene in one of the positions of like the body language that people have when they're being stoned.
Wow.
It's crazy. She asked Brian De Palma how he wanted her to react when Carrie first realizes she's bleeding in the showers. And he said what he said was, it's like you've been hit by a Mack truck. Not knowing that Sissy Spacek's husband, who was the art director on the film, had been run over by a car as a child. So she talked to him and asked him like what it felt like and to describe that whole experience to her. And then that was what she used as her inspiration for how to react as Carrie when she discovered the blood. There was also, I don't think I've taken it down, but there's lots of stuff about how she got cast that like Brian De Palma didn't really want to see her in the role. Like he had someone else in mind for the role, and she had said like, oh, you know, I could come along to an audition, but also I've got this audition for a commercial that's going to pay me, you know, $10,000 whatever. And he was like, oh yeah, you should go to that. And she was like, ugh. So she didn't wash for a few days, covered her hair in Vaseline to show up to the audition, and did the audition like that to be like to try and embody Carrie, and then she got cast. She was, oh yeah, I said that she's 25 years old at the time of filming. So Nancy Allen, who plays Chris in it, said that she never realized that her character was so evil until she saw the film. She thought that her and John Travolta were like such a self-centered, bickering couple of idiots that she thought they were going to be like comic relief side characters. Right. And then saw it, was like, oh God. And Piper Laurie, who played Margaret White, the mother, also thought that her character was so over the top that it must be a comedy.
Right.
So it was kind of surprised to see on screen like how terrifying like she is.
That's good directing.
Betty Buckley, who plays the teacher, had originally auditioned for a different Brian De Palma film and didn't get cast. And he was like, I will get a role for you, something else, and cast her in Carrie. But what she originally auditioned for was Phantom of the Paradise, which we previously talked about, so I thought that was fun. The scene that you did reference, where Nancy Allen performs oral sex on John Travolta to try and manipulate him into helping her bully Carrie, was cut by the Irish Censor Board when the film was released in Ireland. So people who saw Carrie in cinema in Ireland did not see that scene.
Fair enough.
And then I just had a note about the how the book ending happens, but we can talk to that. But she just kind of dies. So she doesn't die in her house. The whole house collapsing thing doesn't happen. She stops her mother's heart, and then she goes after Billy and Chris, and they try to run her down, and she blows up their car, and then she just like collapses, and Sue finds her and tells her that she wasn't, that, you know, that she's sorry, and blah, 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 and then Carrie dies just on the roadside.
Right.
The remake, what have I got here? So Chloe Grace Moretz also, I think, was watched to be very real. So she purposely didn't watch any other version of Carrie before, because she didn't want to be copying someone else's thing or inspired by someone else. She wanted to bring her own thing to it. I feel like there was something else. Oh yeah, so she insisted that they not tell her when they were going to drop the fake blood on her,
because
she wanted to have a real reaction to that. She also, because she was a minor, she was only 15 at the time, she could only work 8 hours a day, whereas other actors could work longer. So a lot of the scenes where Julianne Moore is talking to Carrie,
she's not there,
the director is off screen reading her lines. what was I going to say? Oh, yeah. So she's the first teenager to actually play Carrie. Because there have been TV adaptations as well, which were also played by people in their 20s. There was a scene that it was supposed to begin with. That's a scene from the novel. But as I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, the producer or the production company wanted it to be more like the 76 version. So they cut a lot of the stuff that was for the novel. And it was supposed to be like a young Carrie wandering into her next door neighbor's garden and finding their teenage neighbor sunbathing and then her mother running in and literally like, it like scoops her up and then Carrie gets really upset and has like a tantrum and then it starts like raining stones. So it's supposed to show that like her powers did start young.
Right.
And it was actually filmed for both versions, the 76 version and the 2013 version, and cut from both. So I thought that was interesting. So there was 40 minutes of footage that were cut out of it that were more faithful to the book, and then several scenes that were reshot to make them closer to the 1976 version to make it a remake, which is why I was saying it is a remake. I must not have taken it down in the trivia, but the original 76 version took 50 days to shoot, 2 weeks of which were the prom scene. And at one point, Sissy Spacek slept in her bloody prom clothes for 3 days for continuity so that it wouldn't look different. And for the Chloe Grace Moretz, she said that she was working in the blood for about 3 months.
Jesus.
And to the point that it made her her skin break out and and so she had crazy acne afterwards.
Because it's basically most fake blood on screen is corn syrup and food coloring. And if it goes in people's mouths, they use peppermint extract because doesn't we tend to associate minty flavors with clean.
Right.
Which means it doesn't, because you're putting fake blood in your mouth. Yeah. Your body instantly reacts oh my God, there's blood in my mouth, and you start panicking. But if it tastes clean, people don't.
Interesting.
Oh, it's like there was a whole experiment about dyeing food different colors and see what people eat. If you give someone, we'll go with the full RGB, not RGB. RGB range of chicken that is dyed in a color. I know we both don't eat chicken, but I'm just saying in general, anything that is a natural color, people will eat it. If you dye a chicken, piece of chicken is the exact same, it's just, all it's been is poached and it's just given to you and it's just dyed a different color in the poaching liquid, you will not eat, even if you ate a tiny small amount just for the experiment purposes of say chicken that is dyed blue, your body will react as if you're poisoned.
I'm just thinking about the time my mom tried to feed me green pancakes and I viscerally did not want to eat those.
Possibly green pancakes. It could have been just your survival instinct of not eat something that's green.
If you're listening, Mom.
If you're listening, Mom.
Which you probably are.
Science backs me up.
Science backs me up. That's why don't I vomited. Feed, I didn't know. I just didn't eat them. Yeah. Don't feed kids green pancakes. Unless they're really into that, I guess. I mean, if the kid really wants it.
When you look at Fruity Loops and all those weird children's cereals that are aimed at kids and they're not
I couldn't do that.
It's like gummies in general. I know you don't like them, but gummies in general are not natural colours. Yeah.
So they used 1,000 gallons of fake blood. They did 50 tests of it and they had hair and makeup for Chloe. And so she said she was working for about 3 months in the blood. At the pig farm. Oh yeah, so this was something because I read this before we watched the scene, and I was like, So in the 2013 one, Billy kisses the sledgehammer before he kills the pig.
Yeah.
He got really sick afterwards because there was because they had it on the ground, so there was actual pig droppings farm, on the sledgehammer, and he got incredibly sick after filming.
Yeah.
I think.
I tell you what's really disturbing about that scene, just on that. It's so unbelievably propaganda-esque. It really shows the era. Because on the perimeter, you can't smell it. You've got a medical condition, which means you have no sense of smell. But even when we're visiting Kat,
medical condition.
Oh, not a medical. What would you call it?
I guess it's a disability. Yeah. I just don't have a sense. There's no associated condition with it.
Yeah. You can smell pig farms. Pig farms stink because it smells like human waste because they are the closest to human beings from a genetic point of view. They're omnivores, you know, blah, blah, blah. Having the outside painted like an idealistic farm of that factory is so disturbing to me because it is now, I think, I don't know which countries it's legal in, but in most countries it's illegal to film animal processing and animal farms, because then if you release it to the public would freak out and then try and change legislation and blah, 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 blah. And it is so disturbing to have the outside of this pig farm be muralized in like happy pigs living in a sunny green valley, and then they get over the line and it is not that. It is literally they're in cages, squished together, living in their own filth. Sorry, I just wanted to bring that up because you brought it up.
Yeah, gross. The only other trivia I had down really is that that scene where I said that in the novel she kills her mother by just stopping her heart. They did actually film that for the 2013 one, and it was one of the scenes that they were like, no, reshoot it and do the death scene from the 76 one.
Stab her with a bunch of stuff.
The other thing that I wanted to talk about at some point, but we didn't, but it's, you know, it's not a huge thing, but it's that it's just the evolution of what Carrie looks like, because in the book she's described as like frumpy and plump and covered in acne and stuff like that, and then obviously Sissy Spacek looks nothing like that. She's like skinny and pretty and whatever, so they made it, what they turned it into was that like she could be pretty if she put in an effort,
which is a trope now.
But then in the 2013 one, she just is pretty. Even like they do still have that scene where the teacher's like, just put on some makeup, curl your hair, but like she's a pretty teenager. And what they did instead was that they made Chris someone who is like clearly wearing fake tan and like doing herself up. And it's supposed to kind of subconsciously make you think, oh, she's kind of jealous of the natural beauty that Carrie has. So it's just like this evolution of like, you know, she's this, you know, frumpy, covered in acne teenager to she's. So that, I feel like that's problematic. I'm sorry. I'm just thinking like, surely if she's
covered in acne. You want to talk about problematic moments in these movies?
No. I'm not saying that. I'm saying if we think back to just Stephen King not knowing women.
Yeah.
That, like, surely she wouldn't have had the acne if she hadn't hit puberty yet.
Yeah.
Anyway.
so, you want to talk about the most problematic scene in both these movies?
Sure.
Is the fact that it's a girl's shower scene where they're 17 years old and it is shot in a...
The Brian De Palma one is horrifying.
The fact that there are just like girls running around topless. They're clearly wearing merkins.
And then it's like her... It's Sissy Spacek. Like, the way they shot the Sissy Spacek like shower scene where she's like just like massaging herself. Her
body and like, it's all in slow motion with like soft music playing.
Yeah, I was like, what is happening? Yeah. Like, this is not... how I expected this movie to start. This is not
okay. It's the actual answer.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she was 25.
Yeah.
But still.
Playing a 17-year-old girl.
That's weird. It's really weird.
And the fact that she's...
I feel like they didn't make it, like, sexual in the 2013 one.
Yeah.
Probably because they had an actual 15-year-old.
Yeah.
And, like...
Because then they'd go to jail!
And a female director.
Yeah.
Which probably helped.
But yeah, that opening scene of the shower is just, like, that is, one, unrealistic to reality... Also has twisted every single boy who ever grew up from that era into now, because every single shower gym scene with women, they're all wearing like very expensive underwear and just standing around talking.
Right.
Where in the reality is everyone is ashamed of their own bodies and is hiding in a corner just being like, oh yeah,
finding ways to change your clothes without
seeing anything. And these girls are like running around having tickle fights wearing nothing except merkins.
Also, they none of the actresses wanted to do it in the 70s one. But they had shot Sissy Spacek separately first.
Yeah.
So they showed them all the footage of her And they were like, see, this is what it's going to look like.
See, I make a 17-year-old girl look sexy.
Yeah. And then they were like, okay, all right. Yeah. Let's, you know, and then they all appear naked in the movie. Yeah, it was a weird one. I don't think any of them were teenagers.
You would think, yeah, because it would be a crime.
Yeah. But it's still a weird way to start your movie about teenagers.
Yeah.
Anyway,
thank you for joining us. If you go down to the show notes, you can find our Discord and our website, ittakes2.co.nz. I'm not going to ask you to, you know, join our mailing list. What I'm going to ask you is if you enjoyed any of our content, please share. I know I spent a good 10 minutes shitting on social media, but unfortunately, it is the devil you have to get in the car with.
I will say, I have noticed that Spotify, if you listen on Spotify, have now put a comment section. So you can now comment on our episodes on Spotify. So if you've got anything you want to share with us, that you're happy to be published publicly because it will be public, feel free to comment on our Spotify episodes or on our YouTube episodes.
Yeah. Thank you. Again, stay safe out there with no telekinetic girls on a rampage.
Yeah. Goodbye.